Previously on the Sound of Football podcast.
Gareth Bale won the Player of the Year award last night. And let's just say I'm not too happy about this. What an absolute disgraceful decision for the whole of football.
You'd think that the professional footballers would be able to sort of like pick out who's quite decent. And you know, you can't deny it, he has had a good few games. But you know, he's been out for most of the second half of the season, hasn't he?
Well, he's only just out of Phil Neville's back pocket, hasn't he?
Way, very good.
Yes, it's the Sound of Football podcast with Graham Sibley, Terry DeFellin, and your host, John Hartley.
Welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. This is show 77, and I'm going to be your host for the next half an hour. My name's John Hartley, and, well, I'm standing in, of course, for Chris Oakley, who's on holiday, and I suppose this kind of makes it a little bit like, have I got news for you, being the standing guest and all that. Well, I've got with me Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley. Guys, how are you this evening?
We're both extremely well.
Yep, I can go along with that.
Well, I was saying about it's got a feel of Have I Got News For You. That kind of makes Chris Angus Deaton.
And actually, yeah, that pretty much does.
Yeah.
It fits him quite well, actually.
Oh, excellent.
It does, yeah. There are certain aspects of his character that are very Deaton-esque, wouldn't you agree?
What, like the...
We'll not go there. Well, I hope if he can be Angus Deaton, I can still be me, anyway. Obviously, well, I'm here in his absence, and I get to talk to Terry every week about the Bundesliga, which is absolutely fantastic on our Bundesliga show. But I'm also joined. We're also joined by Terry. By Graham, who has an amazingly similar resemblance to Borussia Dortmund manager Jurgen Klopp. So there is a bit of a Bundesliga loving going here, but we're going to take ourselves away and talk Football League. And, of course, there was a recent TV deal for the Football League. And, well, it's a 26% reduction in the amount of money that Football League clubs will be getting soon from their TV deal. And Sky are going to be the people broadcasting this. As I say, 26% revenue cut from this new deal, boys. That's £23 million a season less than the previous contract. This is going to have a serious knock-on effect to the amount of money that Football League clubs are going to be taking in. And are we going to be seeing, well, more administrations? Because, you know, there's already enough of them in the Football League, as it is, isn't there?
Yeah, certainly. I can imagine there will be more financial hardship for Football League clubs. But then again, I could imagine that if the TV deal had remained the same anyway. I think from what we've seen over the last 20 years is the fact that Football League clubs just haven't learnt the lessons of other clubs that have gone before them. And we've seen clubs that have gone into repeated administration. I think, Terry, you could probably talk a bit more about repeated administration clubs.
Yes, I certainly can. I think it's fair to say that not every club has failed to learn lessons, but I think that there do seem to be a rump of them that fail to learn. And yeah, certainly my club, Crystal Palace, have been in administration twice now in the last decade. Now, obviously, how much of that is down to specifically the TV deal is probably not so clear. But the drive and the ambition by Football League clubs, particularly Championship clubs, to get into the Premier League, often causes them to spend well beyond what they're capable of spending and adopt a totally different power curve than they should be. And this causes them problems in the long term if they don't achieve their aims. And of course, getting promotion to the Premier League is really, really hard. But yeah, and I mean, this TV deal will be a blow, I'm sure. Interestingly, that they've called the TV deal a season before it's due to come in. So they've still got the existing season yet to go before they then. So they've got plenty of time to cut their cloth. So it'll be interesting to see how many clubs you know, react to that and see whether or not any clubs in fact can benefit from the reduced income because they've been able to cut their cloth accordingly and put together a team and a squad of players based on future income.
Well, what do you think, John? What do you think about a club like Yeovil for instance?
Well, plucking a club out of the air. Then.
Plucking my club out of the air, yes. At Yeovil we have a chairman, John Fry, who likes to talk about financial viability and, you know, cutting the cloth accordingly, as you say, that other clubs will need to be doing. Now, John Fry, he likes this in his mind, but at the same time, we can see what is happening with football, because we've just basically secured our place in League One next season, but we've done it with loan players. So this seems to be the new model. That you don't go out and buy a player, which was traditional, and, you know, find out whether or not he's going to be any good or not. You've got to be doing it by loan players. Now, in my mind, that's really not sustainable, because you have players coming in for a short period of time, and then it's going to be make or break whether or not you're actually going to survive another season. Now, there are lots of clubs who will be doing this, but they're not all going to survive, and the hit that you take when you go down a division is quite huge. I mean, it's massive when you come down from the Premier League to the Championship. It's pretty big when you come down from the Championship to the Football League. And even less money when you're striving to push forward. I don't know how it's going to work. I think that the split for this TV deal is something along the lines of, well, it's 65, 25 and 10, or it might be something even smaller than that for League Two teams. They might even get as little as 8% of this TV deal. So if you push on and you're trying to strive for better things and you don't make it, then, you know, it's actually quite a long way to fall. And we've seen a few clubs doing this recently. I mean, Stockport County, they're just about to hit the conference. And, not too long ago, they were in League One hoping for better things. I mean,
they were in the Championship, weren't
they? Oh, they were in the Championship, indeed.
Or Division One, and had a reasonably decent side as well. Mm. Are they not a supporter-owned club, Stockport County?
I think they are now, because of the problems that they've had. Yeah,
but I remember Stockport County's. A very old friend of mine is a Stockport County fan. I remember their journey through in the early 90s through the divisions, and it was an extraordinary one under sort of Danny Begara, and with guys like Andy Kilner playing for them. They had a really, really good side, and they put together this really good team of players, and they were able to make it through. They kind of then sort of like drifted back again before sort of coming into the second tier. But they never struck me in a million years as being a genuinely second tier club. They looked like a lower league club, and, you know, league what we now understand as League One and League Two. But by getting the sense of ambition, by getting on with things, they perhaps got ideas above their station, and it's backfired horribly. Now, you can argue they probably almost certainly would have made some very bad decisions, but ultimately the decision is based on their ambition and their desire for success. And now, of course, it doesn't look like it. They will. They'll be a conference team next season, because, you know, they're only down on mathematics. I mean, their goal difference is is massively out of kilter with the rest of the division, and they're going down. Do you think that it's necessary, John, for clubs to think about the limit of their ambitions and place a limit on their own ambitions?
Well, this was actually going to be my question for you, but I'll answer it first. I think that there needs to be almost a fundamental shift in the way that clubs and their fans view themselves. Now, you know, Terry, that I have an interest in St. Pauli as a football club, and St. Pauli, they base themselves on the idea that, or the fans at least, that the club, it's their club, it represents them and their ideals. I'm not suggesting that every football club should do this, but it should represent an area of this group of fans. Now, it's more important that they have a football club that represents them and their feelings, and that is the primary objective, rather than whether or not they're fighting for promotion each season or they're winning a trophy. The fact that their football club is there and it is the way that they like it, and they can go along and they can feel comfortable and they can enjoy the sport and enjoy the club that they love, should be the primary function of it. Now,
I think that goes
against competitive sport, though, doesn't it? Which is the other problem.
Yeah, but I think in recent years, it's shown that you know, you're not anywhere unless you're pushing for something in football. I mean, the whole thing that gets trotted out about Arsenal, about the fact they've gone yet another season potless, and how much pressure that puts on people at the club. And you said, well, are they? I mean, there was the counter argument of saying, well, you know, they are getting into the Champions League every year. They're doing this. I mean, it's if you look at it one division below, and you're saying, well, you know, yes, they didn't win the actual title. They're not QPR, but they got promoted anyway. And then you said, well, you know, that's a successful season. For Arsenal fans, yes, it can be galling that they're not winning anything, but the continual pressure to say, right, you have to win something, or you have to attain Champions League football, or you have to get, for smaller Premier League clubs even, to the whole thing about finishing top half even, when really what most clubs are doing is just avoiding relegation. I think in a grander scheme, though, if you've got to look at clubs like Wigan. And they've got to be a sort of target for most small clubs who can attract investment. I think any club down in League One or around there could probably think, well, look, you know, if we had the right investment, there's no reason to say why we couldn't be Wigan and enjoying a few seasons up in the top flight.
No, when talking of Arsenal, I have a bit of an Arsenal theory, which unfortunately I don't think will work for most clubs, but it will certainly work for Arsenal, is that the fact that you've built yourself a new stadium, and that obviously brings you in more revenues, but it was a bit of an outlay in the first place. However, you have managed to get into the Champions League each season. You haven't had to spend out too much on players in Premier League terms, and as a result you've managed to pay off this stadium. And now you're looking to make profits. Now, most football clubs can't do that. And I would suggest that maybe, we'll just float this out there, does there need to be a change of, well, the model that we gauge football ownership by in the lower divisions, so people don't push themselves. There aren't the clubs who push the boat out too far. And, you know, everybody's on a slightly more level playing field. How about that? What do you think about that?
I think the whole thing about level playing fields has gone out the window as far as football's concerned. I think you've got. It was interesting what you were saying earlier about the fact of how clubs should represent their fans' feelings. When you've got two clubs now at the top of the Premiership in Man City and Chelsea that have nothing to do with their fans anymore. They're just basically Roman Abramovich and Sheikh Mansour's Invitation 11. You know, they. Any business model you have goes out the window, and you have that down further and further down the leagues. You look at what happened with Notts County when they suddenly they were going to be saved and have huge investment made, and of course, like all the BBSs were full of Notts County fans, like decrying everyone's criticism of it, saying, oh, it's just jealousy. And then all of a sudden it turned to a huge pile of crap.
Yeah, people are saying the same thing about Crawley Town now as well,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah.
Because nobody knows where the money's coming from there, and a lot of people don't like the manager.
Yeah, well, the whole thing stinks.
And the whole thing stinks.
Well, absolutely, it does.
It reeks really badly. The contradiction, John, lies in, of course, in the whole principle of fandom and supporter. Because you've got the supporters who want to own a club and who want to run the club well,
yeah,
and want to look after it, want to preserve it for the ages. And then you've got the supporters who want to get promoted,
yeah,
and they want to win the league.
Yeah.
They want to go to Europe or whatever. They want to beat their local rivals. You know, and you've got this conflict, I think, that does sometimes take place on the terraces that makes it very difficult to be sensible. Because especially if you're getting... You know, football supporters, generally speaking, aren't backwards in coming forwards in sharing their views. And, you know, things can get nasty, it can turn abusive, and club owners and even supporters of the group, I'm sure, have their own problems managing the expectations of a football club. I mean, even
all the time the club is winning,
exactly.
Fans tend to be happy. I mean, especially, I mean, like, you look at Crawley Town. I shouldn't think there are that many Crawley fans, really.
Dan Walker about. From the BBC, you know, Football Focus being the only one that I know of.
Right, okay. Well, I mean, I don't even know whether or not he pays for his ticket. I mean, that matter does have to be addressed, and I suspect that it's a cultural issue as well. I think that this is why the work that Supporters Direct do is very important, in not just in helping supporters, trusts and clubs adopt different principles of governance, but also in to help supporters themselves manage their own expectations.
But there is a problem here, though, isn't there? Is that it's all great and it's all well and good if fans and supporter trusts come in and, you know, fans have got more of a control and their say in what goes on in their football clubs. But then there is a Sheikh Mansour out there or someone else with a potload of cash that wants to buy a football club. And this aspect on the competitiveness of football, it's a juxtaposition. You've got the haves and you've got the have-nots. And okay, I know that's already always been there, but, should it be so wide?
Then what about Hoffenheim in Germany? Here's a club that was basically nothing, then brought up by its bootstraps.
Transformed, yeah.
Yes, by a multi-millionaire, billionaire, I think, nudging, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And yet the... it was a club that was basically derided, wasn't it?
It was a village club, yeah. I mean, they're not very popular because they don't have much culture. I mean, what's your point there?
Well, I'm just trying to say that the culture in Germany is different, whereby there's a club that's come up, and most of the other clubs aren't really willing to accept it. Say, oh yeah, well there you go. That's what happens sometimes. A little club becomes good. You've got fans that are saying, actually, no, this is awful. This isn't the way of things.
Yeah, I think it's much more sort of. Often the way that things are done, though, isn't it? I mean, I don't think that they just didn't like the way that Hoffenheim went about things. In the same way that people don't like the way that Crawley are going about things.
Yeah.
Interestingly, when Wimbledon went through the leagues years ago, from the non-league up to the old First Division, although no one liked the way that they played, a lot of people had a lot of time for the way they went about things. But it's probably fair to say that they probably pumped in a fair amount of cash while they were doing it. And ultimately, weren't able to find the stadium that they needed to sustain themselves, and so they therefore became vulnerable to guys like Pete Winkelmann.
Well, exactly. When the world changed, and they realised that the club was actually built on just their league position.
Yeah,
it became a franchise because that's the only asset it had. It didn't even have fans that it could fall.
Not a sufficient number of fans to be able to sustain themselves at Premier League level without, as I say, becoming vulnerable to guys coming along and taking them and moving away, whether it would have been Dublin or Belfast or, in fact, where they ended up, at Milton Keynes.
Mm. Yeah, this whole thing is a bit of an anomaly because even so, I speak about, wouldn't it be great to have a more level playing field? In the Football League, well, that's fine and all well and good, but then there's the beast outside the gates, which is the Premier League, which I very much doubt would ever sign up to anything like that. So how is it that a club that we might put these financial restrictions and try and level up the playing field and try and get clubs not to overstretch themselves, but, to get into that Premier League
exactly what they should do, John. They're never going to do it, but I know what they should do. If they want to do that, what they need to do is they need to introduce very, very strict governance rules on how much they spend per turnover of their income.
Yep.
It has to be a fixed percentage to ensure that they make sure that everybody's bill is paid. Every club be audited at the beginning of the season to make sure they're going to pay all their creditors over the course of that season, including their players and their ancillary staff and all their contractors. And if you want to be absolutely certain, then you put a cap at the top of the Championship and you turn the Premier League into a franchise.
Yeah.
And then everybody who comes up, and then you have to apply for a licence once every 3 years. That's how you do it. Never happen. But that's how you do it.
Never, ever, ever happen. But that is the only way you're gonna stop it. You can talk about salary caps or or squad limitations. But as John said earlier, the whole of the loan signings that we're seeing in incredible numbers at the moment. I think Arsenal had something ridiculous, like I think 18 players out on loan or something at some point. It was utterly ridiculous how many people they had out this season.
I think there's things around the edges you can do. You can easily reform the loan rules.
Yeah, certainly.
Stop the number of loanees going to a specific number, or rather stop a club from taking in X number of loanees. And you could certainly, I mean, there's UEFA's fair play rules which are coming in. Does that roll down as far as the lower league clubs, I'm afraid?
Well, it's all designed for teams going into European competition, though, isn't
right,
it?
Yeah.
So it doesn't apply domestically, then?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Well, I could be wrong.
In most European leagues, it's hardly an issue, because you know, once you get down to the third tier, you're into regional leagues. In most of even Europe's biggest leagues,
I think only Germany and England have got more than two national divisions. But international listeners can correct us on that.
You're looking at, we only go regional of sorts when you get down to tier six over here, and
that's another thing that could perhaps be readdressed, is that you could look to regionalise, but I mean that would be violently opposed by the clubs.
Oh,
and you have to respect that.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
really wouldn't want to do that.
No.
And I think that's fair that they prefer to take the national. But I mean, if the conference was, or even if the lower leagues of the Football League were actually regionalised, it would save them a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't necessarily curb their ambitions, but it certainly would save them a lot of money.
Well, let's move on to a massive financial anomaly that the football has with its link with the Premier League, and that's the Championship playoff final, which is always dubbed as the most financially lucrative football match in the entire world. This really demonstrates the divide, isn't it? That this game exists and that the benefits financially are so great. So even a team that's, you know, hasn't done particularly well in a season, who may finish sixth in the English second tier, could still be pushing themselves financially, because they go, there's the Premier League, because if I get into sixth, I still have a chance to get there. So, great for the people who win it, not so great for the people who don't.
It's a gamble, isn't it, John?
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
It's like playing the baccarat tables.
Yeah, but it makes wonderful entertainment.
Yeah,
it does.
Tremendous fun.
Which is you know, it's hideous, because you know it's you're watching basically like clubs like survive or die on the roll of on the flip of a coin, almost, isn't it, really?
Because to an extent, yeah.
When you've got a game that is worth 90 million, I don't know what ridiculous figure they plucked out of the air for how much it's actually worth now, but.
Yes, it's arbitrarily large.
Yeah, how can you go into a game and think, right, okay, this 90 minutes, this game is worth £1 million a minute?
It's crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy. But I mean, and you can see then why with the Championship clubs, certainly just to go back to my example at Palace, they were so close, they got promoted, they very, 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 very nearly stayed up. They were minutes away from staying up. They were then relegated, and the owner, Simon Jordan, was desperate to get back up there and could see a way back up there, and so kept the investment coming in, kept the money coming in, to a point where he started to lose control of the situation, and then it all unravelled to a second administration. And we as a club are still very much paying the price for that now, with very nearly getting relegated this week. We may even be relegated at the end of the season, although it's looking like we'll be okay. But Crystal Palace worked their way, had a really successful period in the late 60s, early 70s, and went all the way up from the old fourth division through to the first division, stayed there for four seasons, and then dropped down. And in that time, they've only ever been in the third tier of English football once. Just for one season. But before that time, they were a perennial lower division side. You could argue that the relatively good work and investment that took them through that initial period of success then stabilised them in the second tier, and that's pretty much where they are and what their level is. because of what's happened over the last decade, they're in danger of losing that status. And still, really, they have become reduced as a football club. They're no longer a stick-on first division, a championship or second-tier national football club anymore. They're very close to becoming a League One side, and that league is so competitive now that it's probably very unlikely that Palace would bounce back. They'd probably be looking at a prolonged period of time there. And so this is what administration does. It doesn't just, you know, it's more than a 10-point deduction. It means contracts don't get paid. It means creditors no longer trust you. It means you can't get credit on favourable terms anymore because they don't trust you. And it means that the size of your club just shrinks, physically shrinks. You become a smaller club. And, you know, I think any fans have to bear that in mind when they look at their clubs maybe going into administration, and bear that in mind whenever they have discussions about governance and money.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing as well, because when you look at the... It's not just going into administration. I mean, it's the a lot of clubs that do fall out of the Premiership do end up forming that way. It's the distance by which clubs drop when they fall out. I think I did something for some people on the pitch when that was still going, about what happens to clubs after they go down, and the amount of clubs, of all the clubs that have gone down over, well, since 1992, how many have made it back in again. And it seems that if you're a club, if you don't make it back within one or two seasons,
you're not coming back.
You don't come back.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. I suppose your current example of that is Sheffield United, who came down. And I mean, they had their parachute payments. They even got a little bit of money off of West Ham over the Tevez affair. And you know that even with that amount of money, they weren't able to get themselves back up again. Mm. And they looked like that they could be going into League One next season and joining City rivals Wednesday. I mean, the only great thing that they'll have is they'll have two derbies next season. But you know, I'm sure that Sheffield United fans would have preferred to still be knocking on the door of the Premier League.
I think you've got to look at clubs like that, and you've got to look at Leeds, Leicester, Coventry, Southampton,
Oldham. Founder members of the Premier League.
Notts County. They were
founder members of the league, but they were in the first division the year before the Premier League started.
Yeah,
yeah. And look at where they are there. Swindon Town, founder members of the Premier League, relegated to League Two today.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the costs of failure are pretty horrendous. And yeah, I think it is right for people to say, well, look, you know, is this really necessary? Mm. Is it worth it? What would we prefer? Would we prefer to just be where we are? But then if you say that, people just say it's loser talk.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And one of the things that it drives me up the wall when I go to football is when I hear a fan in the stands going, "Get your chequebook out, chairman," of whoever it is, you know, whichever club it is. And, you know, sort of put my head in my hands and just think, oh, God, if he does that, then we'll be relegated because we won't be able to sustain it. We'll go into administration. And all the things that we've just talked about for the last 25 minutes, you know, can all come about if chairman go, you know, if they take notice and get their chequebook out. But the whole system, I think there really has to be some kind of restraint given, and you know, I fear that this TV deal may stretch people even further if they're too ambitious. And you know, some of the problems lie in the club owners themselves, that you have somebody who comes in and they have all these big ideas and their big ambitions, and then they actually find out that their pockets just simply aren't deep enough.
No.
Because football isn't like a lot of other businesses, because you can't bank on a certain return, because you can only bank on that if you could guarantee that you were going to reach a cup final, or if you were going to reach the Champions League group stages, or if you were going to be promoted. But you can't do that. This is competitive sport. So you just end up with people ploughing their whole fortunes in there, and then, well, not their whole fortunes, because they never bankrupt themselves, do they, these owners?
Well, some of them will come close, but no, generally speaking, they don't.
So, and then suddenly they just pull the plug, and we as football fans are, well, left with the aftermath. That's perhaps a way should be found that we are more in control.
I think there is a way forward. I think that if I mean, you and I, John, I mean, obviously we follow the Bundesliga very closely, arguably more closely than we follow English football now. And you know, we've got a lot to say about their rules on governance that I was referring to earlier, about how you effectively control your spending according to what your turnover is. It is not by any stretch of the imagination a perfect system, but it does help to level out things financially. It still allows for the truly big clubs to be truly big, but it also means that the smaller clubs have a chance at least of living in the same division as the big clubs. Now, I'm not suggesting that this is something that could be rolled out to the Premier League, and we are, in fact, talking about the Football League. But I don't think it would be a bad thing if to an extent, the league said, well, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to impose strict governance laws, not so much ownership laws. I'm not too worried about ownership. But I think governance is the key to good football management. Bring in a certain amount of a certain player budget according to what the clubs can afford, and then go from there. And hopefully provide some incentives for youth development and bringing through good players who can then either go overseas to play or go to the national team, go to the Premier League, and become a positive force in that respect, rather than constantly chasing a dream. Actually say, well, let's chase another dream, let's find a different target, let's produce a World Cup winning side for England.
Well, I suppose this is actually a very good point, that in days gone by, and even in my lifetime, that clubs in the upper echelons of English football would pluck players from lower divisions. Now, this is virtually unheard of now. You know, who was the last player that you remember being plucked out from, I don't know, a third division club who ended up at a Premier League club and actually played a lot?
Don't know, but I don't know whether Jonathan Walters was recently. He's moved to Stoke, hasn't he? Where's he come from? Does anyone know where he's
He was Ipswich, wasn't
Ipswich.
He?
Ipswich, okay, so that's hardly plucked from obscurity, is it?
No, I think that really the last one was probably Jermaine Beckford, I would think, actually, of it.
I think maybe there is perhaps a possibility that some of them are plucked at quite an early age, really, before they've signed professional terms.
This is true.
But one of the points of this is that if they're plucked at that age and they're not taken when they're sort of full professionals, is that the lower league clubs don't actually see any of the profits from it.
No.
And in days gone by, you sold a player for a good amount of money. Well, that sustained your club for a long time, and it's no longer the case that this happens. So it's another part of the puzzle that football clubs just can't rely on anymore.
No, exactly. Yeah, things have changed.
Well, that's it, guys. That's times have changed. It's time to reinvent the Football League, as it were. So should we knock it on the head there, guys? We've done sort of
banged the shits out of that one.
Absolutely. I hope that you're going to apply your bleep machine to that, Mr. DeFellin.
I certainly shall.
Well, I suppose it's only one last thing to say, and that's goodbye and thank you for listening. And next week, Chris will be back, so you'll all be relieved about that.
Oh, that's good. That means I don't have to adopt this "you're not my real dad" face anymore.
Well, I'm glad that you don't have to adopt that face with me, Graham. But do keep the Jurgen Klopp face up. That's okay.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of collar tugging at the moment. That seems to work well as Jurgen Klopp.
Lots of fist pumping as well. You know, just get that up. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. As I say, Chris is back next week, and Graham, Terry, thanks for being with me.
Thank you for joining us. It's been a great pleasure.
And thank you, listeners. Goodbye.
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 Contact The Sound of Football via our website, www.footballfairground.com/soundoffootball. We're also available on Twitter at twitter.com/soundoffootball. John Hartley appears courtesy of the Bundesliga show. Next week, Chris Oakley returns.
Oh, I've been meaning to cough for the last 25 minutes.